Okay, I think now's the time to introduce Benny. Thank you, Benny, for coming down and sharing your story tonight. We look forward to hearing it. Thank you, Benny.
Hello, everybody. My name is Benny Lopez, and I'm an alcoholic.
Thank you
for having me. Thank you. Thank you to the house. Thank you, John, for inviting me. Happy birthday to the birthday people, Robert, Lisa, Brian, and Armenia. It's a big deal. Happy birthday. And welcome to the new people. Welcome. Hope you guys stick around. Welcome all of you. My sobriety date is February 13th of 2010. And just to get this out of the way, I didn't show up to AA in a suit with my hair combed with a girlfriend. Thank you for being here, Natalie. I didn't show up this way by any means. I'm nervous, man. I'm nervous. I'm an alcoholic, so public speaking, it's up there. But here we go. The thing I like about these the speaker meetings, it's a little more intimate. We got a little more time, and it's kind of like the fifth step, right? Where it says tell your whole story, tell your whole life story, share it with someone. So I'll do my best to do that and not bore you guys, right? So, my life story. I come from a big Mexican family. But not from Southern California, from Northern California. I come from that, but I was actually born in the state of Washington. I was born up in Fort Lewis. My dad joined the military during Vietnam, so I'm a military background when I grew up, right? I was born up there. And I come from a big, loving family. My parents, I'm blessed to still have my parents, and they're just loving people. Yeah, they're good people, but no buts. They are good people, and they're a fun family though. They're a big, loving family, and so I was born in 1975, and in that time, my dad was kind of coming out of the hippie years. You know, he joined the military, was doing the hippie thing. So him and my uncles were like running drugs to Washington. You know, being good patriots, And that's just the kind of family I come from, and it's not about judging them or anything like that. It's just they were good people, and they would do their best, right? But they were fun people. I was really little, and we went back to Northern California, and I grew up on this ranch, all agriculture. We grew up on this. I was raised my first few years in this little farmhouse. My grandmother she pretty much married this white guy who owned a ranch, and I got to grow up on this big ranch. And it was, so I have this two dynamics of life growing up, man. I grew up with this like agriculture lifestyle, and I'll tell you, I'm funny because nobody ever guesses I'm a country boy at heart. I really am, and me and Natalie talk about it. It's just funny. It's because it's where I grew up. It's where I come from. But there's these. All these other aspects that come into my life, like my parents were into lowriders at a certain time, right? And going into the 80s, you know, I have this lowrider magazine, and it's the original magazine. It was like the Elvis car was on the cover of this lowrider magazine, right? And my parents were in this car club, and it was just a lot of love, a lot of, you know, love, but like they were pretty rambunctious, man. I grew up with people who just it was I don't want to say it was a gang mentality, but it was definitely maybe a mafia mentality. You know? And I have a note here. I don't have notes down, but it tells me to breathe. I have this to remind me to breathe. It's not any cheating notes or anything like that. It's like breathe, bro. We're here. So. It is this big family with a lot going on, man, as a kid. And they like to drink. They like to party. They like to kill a goat and put it in the ground and stay up all night. And we'd play with the fire and beer and just all that good stuff, man. And we were Catholic. Like, my mom would go to church. My dad didn't really go. And then, you know, it'd be like, why do I have to go, right? And he would hang out and drink beer on Sundays, and I'd have to go to church. And that was kind of the extent of my spirituality, really. It was like that growing up. And as the 80s rolled on, man, and I was a young kid, my family got involved in now we know the cartel game, right? And we were way up there, and up there nobody knew anything about it. And what's funny about being here is like that's not special at all. It's like everybody's like, oh, your family was in the cartel, like a big deal. But up there it was like kind of a big deal, right? Like it didn't happen, and it was fast money, and it was a lot of stuff, and it was the 80s, and it was crazy. And one of my uncles was a boxing promoter, right? He would put these big fights on, and my family would go, and so it was like my family had this like tough, real toughness to it. They were doing all this stuff from the streets, but being, you know, pretty good people at the same time, I guess, if you were on their side. And there was some violence growing up, right? Like they would go to these car shows and get into these fights, and they'd go to these my uncle would have these big boxing matches, and there was one where there was like this giant rumble after, like literally a rumble, you know, and these guys are fighting, and a couple of people that went with us got stabbed, right? And it was just a lot. It was a lot. And the thing was that it's all good, fun, tough stuff. But I'm going to tell you, through all of it, I was a scared little kid. I was scared. It was scary. You know, I'm an emotional guy, too, by the way. I got my gang rag, you know, just in case. I was a scared kid, man. I really was, you know. My dad partied a lot. He'd go out all night. You know, I'm an alcoholic, right? I have a mind that just doesn't leave me alone. And it never has. It never has. And that's why when I was a kid growing up, all these things were going on that my dad was into, my uncles were into, and I'd be up. My dad would go partying all night, or it'd be Tuesday, and he'd just go to the bar all night. And he wouldn't come home. I'd hear his truck pull down the gravel driveway, right? And my mom would be crying all night. And there's my sister sleeping the whole night, sleeping. But I'd be up. I would be up. You know, it's just, I got this mind. It just doesn't let me, you know, be. And that was at a young age. And it's funny because I always say that stuff and I have that history and there is some cool to it, but it's a lot, man. It's a lot. For better, for worse, good or bad, whatever, it was just a lot, and it was a lot for me. And that was through like grade school. And I know because I was about 9 years old and it was really rough, like fourth grade. And about fifth grade, I met Mario, right? I met Mario, and he's a tough Mexican kid. He wasn't like me. I was a little skinny, short little kid, and he was tough. You know, Mario was tough, and he was funny, and he was good at art. And we became fast friends. We became fast friends, and I roll into junior high. This guy's my buddy, and all of a sudden, I'm cool, man. I feel a part of. You know, I'm feeling a part of something. And he knew my background, and he's like, dude, you're tough. You're cool. Like, you're cool, bro. Hang out. Like, and I did. And my life got a little easier after I met that guy. And, you know, and I grew up in this small town. The town I grew up in only had about 5,000 people in it, right, where I went to school. And going, you know, living in a town like that, it was just a lot with this life that I had with this family. But anyways, it got cooler and cooler. And as I got to high school, it got cool, man. I was hip, slick, and cool. You know, my dad at that time was doing a lot of flights, you know, down here and doing business across the border and just doing all these things. And he'd bring me back cool stuff. I remember he brought me back this leather jacket from TJ, and I was a freshman in high school. And I was like the coolest kid in Northern California with this leather jacket, you know. And I was just having a good time, man. I was having a good time, and I was finally fitting in. And right about that age, right about freshman year, was when I really, like, I took my first drink. Right, and I'm not talking about the drink like when we stole the beer and we all, you know, drank it, me and all my cousins. Not that, like when I took a drink, I went to a kegger. We used to go to the rivers and we'd burn all this firewood, and my older sister took me to this kegger, right, and we went out there and I drank, and I had a good time, and I went home that night, and I remember, like, I was worried because I was like, man, I already knew my family had partied, all that good stuff. I already knew everything. I was like, I can't get sick tonight. Like, I can't get sick tonight. Like, I know people puke, and I was feeling good, and I was buzzing and whatever. And then I was like, but you know, I go back to that, and it's like, man, since the first time I drank for the effect, I was trying to control it, right? I was trying to control it. So that night would lead into many more fun nights of high school. A lot of good times, out there in the country. And by senior year, I was drinking every day. We were way up there, but movies like Boys in the Hood came out, and we wanted to be boys in the hood, man. We started drinking 40s of Oldie. I didn't even know what Oldie was. People were drinking Budweiser. That's all they drank where I came from. And we start drinking Oldie, and we start, hanging out, and, we're thinking we're bad, but we're really sad, right? We're out there. We're on country roads, right? Country blocks, but it was a good time. It really was. I was drinking every day, and there was not too many consequences at that time. But early on, one of the first things, I was out of high school and kind of didn't really have any direction where to go because, at that time, this family that I told you, my family was moving fast and making money. Well, all that ended. Two of my uncles got killed, gang style, in TJ. And that ended everything. And my dad was fortunate enough to be home at the time. He got away, and I got to see my dad sleep with a pistol under his pillow for many years because of this. They were playing hardball. I'm getting out of high school. And at this time, as a kid, I've seen people stabbed. I've seen people shot. I had another uncle who got shot and survived on a bad drug deal. They weren't good at the game, obviously, man. It's sad, but it's true. I cousins that I grew up with, their dads were gone. These things were real. Like, it was over. It was over. And this was a big deal for my family. See, I had nowhere to go after high school because my plan was, like, I'm gonna work for my uncle, and I'm going to buy a new Toyota truck, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to move, down to San Diego, right? Kind of what I was thinking. And it's funny because growing up, I'd always say, oh, I'm going to San Diego. I'm going because we would come down here pretty often. And I would come down here, and the thing is that eventually when I did come to San Diego, like, I didn't know anything about San Diego because we would land at the airport and go to TJ. That was as a kid what we would do. So anyways, I get out of high school, all this traumatic stuff is going on. I didn't think I had to study or do anything, so I didn't, and I started getting into trouble. At 18, 19, I get picked up at a bar. I'm partying. I had cocaine in my pocket, right? And the cop finds it. Like, I'm not even smart. I'm a bad criminal too, by the way. I get caught with this coke in my pocket, and it's just dumb because I'm just really drunk. Don't even know why I had it. And I had to go to I had to come here. I had to go to AA. They made me do the program, right, through the courts and do the court cards. And I would sign my own court card, by the way. I went to like a couple of AA meetings at 19, and I was like, nobody sign my court cards. And that's just kind of how I am. I'm a very half measures guy without AA. Life keeps going, man. I'm going into my early 20s, and I kind of really don't have any direction. I do what people where I come from were doing when you have no direction. I decided to get married and have kids, and I did that. I got married, got a job at a tire shop, and just got into that. I was gonna just drink beer, buy a house out in the country, and do that. And the thing is, I'm an alcoholic, right? I got this mind that overthinks. I don't plan things out very well. I married somebody because they were pregnant, right? She was pregnant. And so it was just that really young, immature, unhappy, fighting marriage, right? It wasn't pretty. And I was enjoying drinking. I enjoyed my drinking, and she didn't. During those times, it was like I was sneaking into my own house. It was just really weird times, And I have this family that loves me to no end, and I love them, and they are codependent a lot of times. And, they always had my back no matter what I was doing, right? Like, no matter what I do in life. And they had my back, and it just wasn't a good recipe. But I'm having these kids, and I'm trying to live this life, the drink is just for sure coming up. Like, I'm drinking more often. And so I get done with the tire shop because I don't want to do that anymore. See, my dream was to be a mechanic, and then I didn't want to be a mechanic because that's the story of my life. I start things and I don't finish them. And I had the opportunity to go to college. So I packed up the family, went up to Chico, which was about 30 minutes up the road, and started, you know, working on my education. So I have the kids there, and I'm at Chico State, and I have the family, and it's this, like, this whole college atmosphere, and they got bars all over the place. There's, like, 20-something bars in a three-block radius, something crazy. And I'm drinking, and it's not working out. And you guys know how this story goes. It doesn't work. Before too long, she's gone. She's gone, and she's taking the kids, and she wants child support, and she wants all this and that, and I don't make enough money. And it just starts to get worse. Because now I at that time, I'm kind of keeping it cool. I'm keeping it, waiting till the weekends, maybe one night a week. And now I got this excuse, right? I don't have my kids. She took them away. I didn't even do anything. I didn't deserve this. Now I'm drinking every night, right? And my family's like, yeah, I would drink too. You know, we think Benny might have a problem. But no, you know, it's everything he's going through, right? And so my drinking at that point, like, it definitely kicked up. And I already knew there was something. I knew I drank. I didn't drink like other people because I was really young. I was really skinny. I was really small, but I could drink all night. And I could hang with people without drugs. It just got a little worse, you know? And I just continued to drink, right? And then I get my own apartment. And then I find the new her on campus. And she likes to drink and party, right? But I'm an alcoholic. Right, I make heavy drinkers just really uncomfortable, you know. And before long, she's gone, and I'm getting it towards the end of my 20s, and nobody's around, and I'm feeling worse about myself, and I just want to drink, I just really do. It's the only thing that really makes me feel good and whole. Without the drink, I just don't feel like I amount to anything. You know, and I'm trying to be the best dad I can at this time, and I'm doing my best to pick up my kids. And I'll tell you that a lot of times that threw me off during my drinking, but because I would keep it together enough to make the family happy and to give my mom hope, and then it would all crumble, right? It'd be a DUI. It would be, name it, arrested, drunk in public, whatever it is. And so I'm up in Chico, and I'm trying to wrap up this degree, and I can't, and I'm drinking, and my drinking's getting pretty bad, and they're talking about rehab, right? Rehab, man, maybe you should go to rehab. And I'm like, okay, it's bad enough. I feel horrible enough. Let's go to rehab. So they send me to a rehab in Sacramento, California. And I go to this rehab, and I'll tell you guys, man, I got no problem staying sober in a rehab. I got no problem staying sober in jail either. And I go to this rehab, and I do a couple months in there, and I'm reading the stuff on the wall, and I'm meeting some great people, and the problem is, though, like I'm telling you, like I started this at the beginning with my family and agriculture and lowriders and all this. It's just I have a hard time fitting in. I have a hard time being a part of anything. I'm a lone wolf, and that's not like in a tough way lone wolf. Like, I'm a loner. I do better by myself. I drank alone a lot. Like, I like dive bars. That's enough. Take me to a club. I don't know why you drink in a club. You can't hear anything. And yes, it's me. I don't. I'm a drink alone kind of guy. And so, and that's why rehab's coming up and all that stuff, right? Because it's all getting pretty sad. And so I get to this rehab, and I do a couple of months, and I meet some people, and I start smoking cigarettes. I don't smoke cigarettes. I start smoking cigarettes. It's weird. And I'm buddying around with these guys. They're taking us in a van here and there. and I'm feeling really good because I'm in rehab, and my family's visiting me, and they bring my kids, and everyone's happy. It's kind of weird, but it is what it is, and it's like, okay, here's this new thing, right? And so I finally leave this place after like 3 months because I did the halfway house and all that, and I'm heading out, and I'm heading out to the world, and you know what? All I need is to get that apartment, get that job, so I can start having my visitation with my kids, and life will be good and normal, and I'll eventually meet somebody and get the house with the fence and the truck and the boat and the jet skis and take some vacations and go to Rome. And I mean, let's go. It doesn't end. I have the mind of an alcoholic. And so I have these dreams, right? And here I go. I'm out of this rehab, and everybody's happy. My family's happy because I hadn't been drunk in months, and they're happy, right? And the thing is, guys, I'm not happy. You know, I'm in line at the grocery store because I got my son in visitation, and I'm waiting, and the line's moving so slow, and I just want to punch the guy's head in front of me because the damn line is moving so slow, right? And I have some family take me in, and they let me stay in their spare bedroom, and I'm staying in the spare bedroom, and I'm really grateful. And I'm waking up in the middle of the night, and I'm crying. And I don't know why. And I hate my life. And it's one more thing. I can't drink one more thing. Throw it on the stack of everything else in my life that I'm doing, and it's one more thing, and I can't take it. I can't take it, and I take a drink again. I drink. And after that stint in rehab and that little moment of being sober, I go back out, and I get into a hit and run, another DUI, two separates there, and I get to this point where I'm like, okay, this is really bad. I really need to stop, but I can't stop. I tried stopping, so. You know, it's in my DNA. See, my grandparents are all from Jalisco, Mexico. That's where tequila originated from. Right, it's in my blood. It's in my DNA. I can't stop drinking. I have to control it. I got to drink like a gentleman. I got to take it easy. I can't go over the deep end. And so I do that. And the thing is, when I do that, it's no fun. It's no fun when I do that. It's no fun at all. So I drink, and I you know, it's just, it gets really bad again. At this time, I'm getting close to my mid-30s, and I just can't get it together. I just can't get it together, man. And through one other event on a run where I'm just drinking, and mind you, I had this job show, but I had the job, and I got the apartment, and I got everything because I got this cool job, right? And I'm like, okay, this is it. But it doesn't. After time, it just none of that does it. None of that can keep me sober. And so I go on this run, and it was right around this time of year, and it was 7 days and of straight, just like stay home and just drink. And my place is pathetic, right? I've like got those nasty bed sheets. I got the empty pizza box in the fridge with a bottle of mustard. Like there's nothing. You know, and my life is just sad, and it's just, and I'm drinking, and I'm like, this is ridiculous. So I gotta get to a hospital, and I have this good job, so I'm like, I gotta get a doctor's note, right? I gotta get a doctor's note because they're not gonna believe why I haven't been here. So, I get the doctor's note, but anyways, I get to AA down the street. And I'm like, here we go again, and I get down there, and it's the church down the street, and there's this guy there, and He at the end of the meeting, he puts his hand out and he says, "Hey man, you know, my name's Victor S. and I'd be willing to take you through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous." And I've been in and out of AA, and I've been to rehab, and I'm like, what are we gonna do? He's gonna take me through these steps? Because I said, yeah, and he gave me his number, and I'm like, I'm gonna call him, but what's he gonna do? And you know what Victor did? He had me to his house, and he took me through the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, step by step. And from that day to this, I haven't had to take a drink. God is good. You know, it's funny. You know, we get through the steps, and nothing really, really big happened. It didn't. Like we get through, and I'm just kind of tired of my life at the time, and I'm a few months in, and a couple months in at this time, and we're doing these steps, and we get done, and he goes, here, I got this here. You can take it. Take this paper. It's the steps that I just took you through, and you're gonna go down to the rehabs out here in Sacramento, and you're gonna go to Salvation Army, and you're gonna take guys through the steps. And I was like, "What are you talking about? I don't know what I'm doing here, man. Like, how am I gonna take these guys through the steps? He's just go do it. They know less than you." Okay. So I get down there and I start and I do that, and I walk through that fear, and I get down there and hey, I get one guy, and we go into the chapel, and we just start going through these steps. And holy smokes, does my life start to change. I start to have this experience with a power greater than myself that I call God. Not the God from the Catholic Church. He's a good guy, I'm sure. But that didn't resonate with me, and I don't know why, and when I get there, maybe I'll ask, right? But that didn't. That didn't. And I just start taking these guys through the steps, right? And I start meeting a bunch of dudes who are doing the same thing, and these guys are going to meetings, and these guys are going to speaker meetings like this, and we're going to meet here, and we're going to go over there, and we're going to go to the book study, and I just jump in. Let's do this. Rock and roll. Let's do this, man. Let's do it. And I start doing it. I start getting in there and just getting knee-deep in AA. And just life got good, man. This thing right here, I call it the meat grinder. It's the meat grinder because it won't leave me alone. It will not leave me alone. And it still doesn't leave me alone if I stop hanging around and doing the things that are in this program. It'll come back. It'll come back even if I am sometimes. Because sometimes life can get really good in here, and it has. But sometimes, some days, just drinking is got to be enough sometimes. You know, so life got good, man. Good friends, just like the book talks about, a fellowship will grow up about you. This fellowship grew up about me, man. My good best friend, Tim S., was in a wheelchair, paralyzed from the chest down. And just this, we're doing AA, man, and just super humbling. This guy getting in and out of his car, having to help him get his chair, you know, helping him with his meals, helping him do all this. And we did all the outdoor AA stuff too, man. And it was just such a gift to have Tim in my life, right? And then there was Yoga Aaron, who would do yoga, right? All of a sudden we're doing yoga, and I'm doing all this stuff that is nothing from where I come from, man. It's all this good stuff, and it's a bunch of group of guys, and it's just AA at its core, and it got good, man. It got good. It got really good. I was employable, and I still am. My sponsor would say stuff like, you know, when you go to work, you're not going to talk. Your boss is going to talk. Your boss doesn't want to hear from you. Your boss wants to talk to you. And so I did that, and I kept my mouth shut. And then, and if I want to back up, when I went to my first meeting with my sponsor at his home group, we were driving, and I was, again, we were like starting, we had just kind of started the steps, and we're going, and he goes, hey, tonight, you're not going to talk. And I was like, and he's like, no, we're going to wait a while, get a little bit into these steps, and then you can share yourself. But if you get called on, just say thank you and pass. And then it was awesome. Like he was just, you know, it was just like that Jedi mind trick, man. Because you see, I got the meat grinder. I got the thing that's going when I'm sitting there and I'm going to get called on possibly that day. I'm not thinking about what you have to say. I'm not thinking about what you're going through and what you might be sharing and something that I might help you out with maybe at the end of the meeting with a kind word. I'm thinking about what I got to say to you. See, I got this ego that just is inflated, man. And it just, I don't want to look dumb. I don't want to look silly. All these things that just, this mind just gets me, man. But, you know, because of this program, because of the principles in this program, it's just, like I said, my life is good today. You know, that job that I had, that I wanted, that I had messed up and gone to the hospital, you know, to you know, get the note and all that, and they were ready to get rid of me. I'm still with that agency. That's actually a government agency, and I'm an administrator with them now somehow. And it was just really from keeping my mouth shut, showing up, and then probably not calling out sick, hungover. Probably had a lot to do with it. But I'm that's not about me. That's about this program, you know. It's about this program, and I got a car that functioned, and I registered, you know, I paid for the registration and all that. I mean, they taught me all that here. I made my first dentist appointment. I had gone to the dentist before AA, but I'd never made my own appointment. Somebody always had to do that for me. Yeah, I made my first dentist appointment in AA. You know, I said I'd gone to Chico State. I had owed the university money because I've always owed people money, right? And I go there because I'd gotten in a wreck like the year before I'd gotten sober. And so this chunk of money came in after I was sober. So it was like, God knows, right? And it showed up, and I got to sit down with my sponsor and say, you know, what am I going to do with this money? Because I owe this college and I owe people. Excuse me. Oh, sorry. And he said one of the most profound things. He said, you're going to take your boys to Disneyland. I was like, what? And I'm just, that gets me because I love my kids so much and I love my family so much. But my selfishness and self-centeredness will never go there, man. Not on my own. It took you guys. It's taken you guys. And so we go to Disneyland, man, and we have a great time. And that's in my first year of sobriety, and it sticks out so much. It was such a big deal. It's still such a big deal. My boys still remember that. My boys are now 24 and 27 years old, and they still remember that trip. It was just good. And there has been good trips in between. You know, there's been traveling. That first year that I got here, they said, make a list of the things you want to do, the goals you have, the things you want to see and do. And I did that. And I got that. I still have that list, and I got a new list because most of those things happened. You know, most of those things. And the thing is like bigger things have happened, right? Like bigger things that I've wanted, and I didn't even know. But I wanted to travel, and I wanted, you know, just you know, reliable cars, and you know, just to do some fun things. And those things, you know, have happened, and it's been good. It's been a good life. Now, my family, I mean, my mom especially, she was just, because that's who suffers the most, right? The ex-wife was gone. The girlfriends are gone. And it was mom, right? She paid the price. She paid the price for my seat here, really, at the end of the day. She was the one who would burn candles and stay up praying. So maybe there is something to that Catholic thing. And she did, man. And so, you know, it's just life shows up though too. You know, life can show up. In 2017, you see, well, in late 2016, I was back in court for the last time in sobriety, and my son was 16 and he was at the skate park. He was a skater. I couldn't get him in school. The sheriffs were sending letters and he was hanging around folks like us, to be honest, right? And his mom took me back to court and got full custody, and I went with the documentations, and you guys all had my back, and I went, and I didn't get my son. He got to live with his mom full time because he was 15, 16, going, you're right, so he stayed. So that was at one point where I was really resentful at AA. I was resentful just because I had worked with others and done this thing and stayed really busy. You know, I'd helped start meetings. I'd been to conventions and I'd been a part of all that good stuff that we do in here. And I was mad. And I left the courthouse and I had enough tools to call someone. So I called my sponsor. He didn't answer. I called my grand sponsor and he answered, and I told him what had happened because I was pretty distraught. And I go, yeah, man, I got to pay all this money now. I lost custody of my kid. And he goes, well, that's nothing to drink about. And I'm like, and that hit, and it was just that simple. And I was still in a pretty bad mood for about a month, but I was taught, you know, to keep my feet moving, because that's what my sponsor cared about when I was here. He didn't really care too much about what I'd been through. He didn't care about my background. He didn't care about my lowrider family. He didn't care about anybody that. He cared about what my feet were doing and where I was going to be, right? That's what he cared about. And so I kept my feet moving. And when 2017 rolled around, I got a transfer. I'd put in a transfer because I was mad at the world. I'm like, I'm going to transfer jobs. I'm going to go live somewhere else in L.A. or San Diego, Hawaii, wherever. I'm going to go live somewhere. And San Diego came up. They're like, and my boss called me one day. She's like, hey, you put in that request a couple months ago. Like, you're going to go to San Diego. And I was like, holy smokes. I went to my buddy at work. He's like, dude, your life just changed. And I was like, cool, boom, San Diego, man. And I get down here, and I'm really excited about it, right? And it was just the change, right? And then there was also excitement. Oh, maybe my kids will come down here with me now because it's a cool place, and all those, you know, thoughts that you have. The thing is that, you know, life shows up. And I mentioned Timmy in the wheelchair, and Timmy passed away. You know, he passed away New Year's Day, 2017. And you know, the next thing I'm going to share, I've never shared really with too many people. And I really haven't shared with too many people in AA. And in 2017, I lost 7 people in my life. 7. Near and dear to my heart. it does a number on you, man. I won't go through all of them, but Timmy passed away. That was big. He was like my best friend in here, man. My godfather, who had been such a good father figure in my life. He was actually not a low riding kind of guy, and he even though him and my dad were tight when I was born, he baptized me, all that stuff. He was an outdoor country guy, and he was an amazing human being. And Mario passed away. My good best friend from childhood passed away. And at that time, I was 7 years sober. And I'll tell you, for 7 years, I spent many a night on calls with him because he wanted this way of life. And he couldn't get it. We went to meetings together, and he just couldn't get it. And he just couldn't get it. And that's just what happens sometimes. And then my good Uncle Will, who definitely qualifies as one of us. He had like liver transplant kind of guy and still kind of party kind of dude. But just a great, great, funny human being, awesome uncle. And I lost some other people, and that was tough. And so kept my feet moving, man, keep showing up. And now I'm in a new land with new faces and new people, and everyone's gone because I did the geographical. We talk about the geographical in AA, and it's a tough one. It's a tough one. But God provides, man. You know, I was in the rooms, and God provided just even more friends, and one of the biggest blessings of all time showed up, and that was surfing. You see, when I was coming down here, I knew people surfed. I was 41 years old, and I'm like, I'm 41, I don't surf. I'm going to maybe get a kayak. Swear. Like, maybe I'll get a kayak. Well, the first week I was here, I rented a board, and it's been on and cracking ever since. I love surfing. It is a spiritual experience for me, and it was good, man. It still gives me peace to this day. And the thing was, a little after 2017, a couple years later, I'm planning a trip to Yosemite with my boys. We're gonna go to Yosemite for the weekend with my two sons, and we're gonna get in the car. We're gonna go. And thank you. And the deal is, we're getting ready, and I'm at my storage getting my camping gear, and my ex-wife calls me, and she's hysterical, which isn't too out of the norm. She's hysterical, but she was a little extra hysterical, and I was like, "What's up?" And she said, "Joey's sick," and Joey's my oldest. She said, "Joey's sick," and I'm like, "What do you mean Joey's sick?" She says, "He's sick. He's got HIV. He's sick." And, you know, thank God for AA. I'm crying right now. But I had to pack up that camping gear, and I did. And I called my son, and we had a talk. And he said, and I said, "Son, you know, we ain't got to go. We're having," he said, "we're going. We're going to Yosemite." And I packed up that car. And him and my younger son, the three of us, went to Yosemite. About a 4-day road trip. And I didn't cry on that trip. I didn't cry once. See, I can cry in front of you guys, but there's times in life when we can't, and God does it. And God did it that weekend, man. It was tough. He was going through the, you know, he was getting out, he put the shits, and his body was, and it was, you know, we got a hotel room one night, and it was tough. It was tough, but I was there, and I stood strong. And I shared words that you good folks have shared with me. And I was able to give AA to him. And Thanksgiving of this past year, I went to visit him. He's living in Miami on South Beach. He graduated from Long Beach State University. He's taking his meds. It's undetectable. And he's living a happy, prosperous life. God is good. And we get lumps in the head in here, man. We get lumps in the head. And I don't want to rip on anyone who says stuff like, "Don't drink no matter what." Because, you know, I'm going to drink way before "don't drink no matter what." And my history shows that, because I woke up thousands of times saying "don't drink no matter what." right? I'm the guy who gets up and I'm hungover, but my hungover looks like a good time at 6:30 in the morning when I'm driving to work and cranking the stereo. I'm having a good time because there's still alcohol in my system. But when I'm driving home in the afternoon and I'm dying, but I don't want to drink again, and I'm telling myself I'm not going to drink again, and I pass the liquor store, I pass it, and I turn to go down my street, and I flip a U-turn, and I go back. And I walk in there, and I go, I'm just going to get a tall can because I love my beer. Arena? I'm sorry, I got your name wrong. Armenia. I love my beer, too. And I go back to get my tall can, but then I grab the 12-pack, and when I go up to the counter, I get the bottle. And it's that over and over again, right? But I come back. Let me bring it back to AA. This is that I'm here, and this is a beautiful, beautiful program, guys. It's a beautiful program. The spiritual experience that I've had in here because of the steps, and because I continue to stay in the steps, right? I continue to stay in them. And if don't drink no matter what works for you, awesome. What works for me is step 12. Because when I get a new guy and I take him through the steps, I take the steps all over again. And I do my best to live in 10, 11, and 12. And the past few years, it's been a lot of 11. Pray, read, write, meditate, pray. That's my little thing that I do in the morning. And I get that out now. And I might not be able to make a meeting every day, but I got God every day, right? I got my prayers. I got my books. Natalie knows I got my dorky little toolkit of a zipper thing that's got my books in it, and I write. Right? And I have a sponsor today who knows that he sponsors me, but I also have brothers today, and they know that I could call them if I need to, and I do. Right? I got you good folks to share these things that I go through, because some days they ain't good days, man. Some days are not. Well, they don't feel like good days, right? And that's why I said earlier, sometimes drinking is just not enough. But I will say, overall, I have had way more good days than bad days in here. Way more. You know, I've had some tough times for sure, but I get to go out with my buddies and surf, and I can't say enough about that. You know, I'm an off-road guy. I got more Jeeps than I know what to do with it. I just do. And they're just, they're blessings, and sometimes they're not. You know, my mom sleeps well every night. My mom sleeps good every night, you know, and she doesn't come here, but on her behalf, thank you so much. She wants to thank all of you. That lady, she didn't deserve what I put her through, man. And it's just life's funky, you know. Also in 2020, I got into a scenario where I had another kid, and I have a daughter. I have a daughter who's going to be 4 in March. And she lives in Boston. And so I frequent Boston. And I FaceTime her, and I'm the best dad I could be. These circumstances are what they are. You know, and it's just my life. I wouldn't trade it for anything. It's just an amazing life, and it's all because of God. You know, and if you're new and you're struggling with God, and you got to go back out. I hope you don't, man. But if you're struggling with this God thing, I don't know, man. Because the only thing that brought me back to God was always more booze, really. And the thing is that I tried to do this thing by myself. I really did for a long, long, long time. And the only thing that worked for me was this. These 12 steps, these principles. And I might not be the best meeting maker, and I might not be the best, I don't know, coffee maker, whatever it is out here. I try to do it, and all of it, right? I take on a little bit too much these days. I do. This, you know, I travel. One of my goals was like travel. I ended up traveling so much over the past few years that now I got to like not travel so much. It's true. Sometimes our blessings just end up coming back and biting us a little bit. But, you know, overall, it's awesome. You know, and I've heard it said here, you know, stay in the middle of the herd, stay in the middle of the herd for sure. And that means stay close, go to your meetings, stay close to the people that are here. Right. But my herd, you know, I have a big herd. My herd doesn't end at the fences of AA. I have a big family. I got like 20 something first cousins who have kids, and most everyone drinks. And most everyone who has a problem calls me. You know, I get calls from prison. I get calls from county. I get calls from rehab. And this isn't outside of my AA life. My girlfriend can attest. She's like, she sees it. My life is AA every day. AA every day, man. You know, and it's just, it is, you know. My alcoholism, I used to curse it. I used to hate it. And I would never want those days back for anything. You know, I know tomorrow's not promised. I don't know what tomorrow's, you know, bringing. But, you know, I just am just so happy and relieved and just feel so blessed with my life today. I do feel just so blessed. It's just, this is an amazing program. It's an amazing program, and it's a program of work. You got to get busy with the work, guys. You new guys, it takes work. And if you're out there and you keep, you know, drinking or relapsing, doing whatever, right, going over and over, and you're just like, I have no will. You have the will to do it. Because if you were like me, you know, I would say I had no will, but somehow I drank every day with no money. There's some will in there. And there's work to be done in here. It is work. It's simple, but it's not easy. And it's an inconvenience for sure. But make no mistake that alcohol was way more of an inconvenience than anything that I've ever, you know, ran into. This life has just been amazing. It's been an amazing life. I just, for you new guys, I can't say it enough. Get busy. Get a sponsor. Get into the steps. Regardless of what the meat grinder is saying. Because the meat grinder is going to say a lot of things. It's going to tell you feel a lot of certain ways. And if you just keep moving, it works out, man. It works out. There's promises. And you get a sponsor, have them walk you through the promises. Those promises have happened. They've happened to me. And you know, and I'm talking about my herd and my kids. My kids call me today, man. My kids were on the verge because they were like 13 and 10 before I came in here. And they were like, they didn't want anything to do with me anymore. And they call me today. They call me when they're in a jam. They call me when just life shows up. And it's funny because I'll just say the things that you guys have taught me. That's all I do. And they just, they keep calling back. So I must be saying the right things. And I love my kids. I love my sober life. I love it. I love it. And I did write something on the back of this that I wanted to share. And it's out of the chapter, There Is a Solution, on page 19 of the big book. And it says, a much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. And what that means to me, guys, is I can come in here and I can say and share all these great things, and I'm doing great, and I got a great life, and you know, I'm getting all this stuff, but for me, AA starts when I walk out those doors, man. How am I treating everybody out there? What am I saying behind your back? Right? And I do my best, and I fall short, man. I fall real short. Ask my girlfriend that. I fall short. But thank God for whoever opened this place today. Thank you for giving us a place to come to. Thank you to for whoever kept on the lights, whoever cooked, whoever made the coffee. Thank you, whoever set up the tables. Thank you so much. And you new guys take note, because see, I didn't ever think about that. I didn't ever think about who's setting up. I was thinking about what I want. With that, I love you all so much. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Benny, for sharing your wonderful story with us. Now, how about another round of applause? Let's thank the cooks for a wonderful spaghetti dinner. Thank you, guys. And we can circle up now and close with a prayer of Benny's choice. And don't forget, we got bingo on Friday, and we got cake back there tonight.